Good stuff. Every time I watch that video, I get really concerned that they accidentally are going to lean up against that fence. It's an electric fence. You know, when you're up against a fence, you want to just kind of go, oh, kind of like this, or lean up. Electric fence, barbed wire, and then another fence that's large. There is a huge demarcation there physically between being free physically and being bound physically. And today we're going to talk about some people who were bound physically, but the main thing we're going to look at today is how we can all be freed spiritually. And most of us in here are not free. We're not. A very, very, very high percentage of it. And you might not understand what I'm talking about, but hopefully you will by the end of our time here today as we continue on in this Roadmap for Revolution series where we're seeing what is it about this early revolution of followers of Jesus that swept across the Middle East, the globe, and throughout all times to be the most powerful thing that is in the process of still positively affecting our world. What was it? And one of the things was these people had a message of freedom and grace that they wanted people to get. Well, let's pray before I do anything else. God, I'm asking that you'd help us to see this in ways that we haven't before. Help us to hear this in ways that we've never heard of before. And I'm praying that my words would come as a reflection of who you are in your heart, and you'd help me sense what needs to be said and the way it needs to be said. And I'm thankful for this opportunity. I pray these things according to the free character of Jesus. Amen. Well, you know, we're excited you're here. We don't expect anybody just because you're here. You're going to believe everything I say, agree with everything I say, have a framework for it. We're excited you're here regardless of what your current belief system, spiritual orientation, anything like that. But one thing that I'm regularly surprised by is how many people who claim to know Jesus, really don't. To see how many people operate in the world who claim to align themselves with Jesus is to see people actually live entirely contrary to the way in which he lives. Jesus actually outed himself, and when he outed himself, when he declared himself, the first time he declared himself publicly was in the book of Luke chapter 4, and he quotes an Old Testament prophet that's talking about the coming Messiah, and he assigns this prophecy to himself in declaring who he was by saying this in Luke chapter 4. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. I have come to bring good news. I've come to set captives free. I've come to set the oppressed free. Not just the oppressed racially or the oppressed politically or the oppressed physically, but also the oppressed addictions, oppressed in mindsets, oppressed in fears, oppressed in anything that keeps you from being who God wants you to do. I've come to set you free. See, Jesus did not come to start a new religion. He did not. Every religion, every philosophy, every spirituality basically is the same. It says something like this: believe this and do this and you'll be good. Believe this and do this and you'll be good. And there's some overlaps in different religions, spiritualities, philosophy. Pretty much that's the exact same thing. Believe this, do this, and you'll be good. This is why I don't like when someone comes and knocks on my door. Whatever religion they're a part of, you know, Seventh-day Adventist, Christian religion, Jehovah's Witness, whatever. It's all the same thing. It's a or the religion, like, vote this way and sign this thing. Because if we sign this thing, everything's going to be good and you're going to be a nice person. It's all the idea of if you do these right things, then you'll be right and you'll be good. Jesus never came for that. He said, I've come to set you free. I've not come to have you agree to a set of principles. I've not come to have you ordain a priest-prescribed thing that if you do this and I approve of you. I've come from the outside to set you free. This is radical. This is revolutionary. This is why early followers of Jesus wanted to go around and talk about this. They weren't trying to proselytize or convert people the way we do to try to get people to think like us so we feel good that you now feel like me. They wanted to give a message of freedom, a message of grace that had never existed before and still doesn't exist in the way in which Jesus brings it. So in the midst of that, we're going to camp out with some people who are now physically oppressed, yet while they're physically oppressed, they're actually spiritually free. It comes with Paul and Silas, who are out just giving this message of freedom because they want people free. Not because they want people to think like them, but they want people to be free, and people who are hearing this message don't like it because they're threatened, so they well, I'll tell you what they do. Here's what happens. The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. When he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Very strange. Very, 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 very strange. They are being oppressed physically for the way in which they're trying to bring freedom, and then they are stripped naked. How many have been stripped naked against your will? Against your will. Stripped naked. That's supposed to be funny. I'm sorry. It's supposed to be funny. You can laugh. You can laugh at naked things in church. Yes, you can. Stripped naked. They are stripped naked, butt naked. They are beaten with rods. If that's not enough, they're flogged. Long leather strips with sharp objects tied into them coming down across their flesh. I don't know how many times, but this is not good. And then they are thrown into a cell, thrown into a hard, dark, damp place, and they're put in stocks, chained. This is not a good day. This is not a good day. And yet, what do? They sing. They sing. What? They sing. They're actually praying and talking to God. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't like to sing when I've just been beat up. That's not something I want to do. But they're experiencing something that transcends their physical circumstances. I'm going to give you a few things about what freedom is, and then we'll give you a few things to think about applying to your life. Freedom is dependence. Freedom is dependence. This is contrary to the way we think. We think freedom is independence. Freedom is I just go out and do whatever the heck I want to do. It's like physical maturity operates exactly opposite of spiritual maturity. Physical maturity is one where I become independent and I don't need people to feed me, change my diaper, that kind of thing. Spiritual maturity is entirely different. It's when you actually choose to depend on God. You're in places where you depend on God, and when you depend on God, you feel this freedom that transcends your circumstances. Paul and Silas are feeling this freedom that transcends an awful, awful situation, so much so that they actually are singing. I've never been beaten this way. Now, I've been spanked back in old school times. Back then, they used to spank you when you went to school. That's right, second grade, put a tack on Mrs. Bash's seat. And Principal Mr. Milovats, how's that for a name? Spanked me. I got hit that way. I got beaten that way. It wasn't for my faith, but just for doing something stupid. And then when I was on family vacations, how many of us used to do the thing when you're in the back seat with your brothers and sisters and you're doing that thing going, okay, here's the line. Here is the line. You're not allowed to go past this, the line. It's like our boundaries. We didn't use those terms back then, but this is my boundary, the line. Now, I was the oldest brother, and so therefore I was the annoying older brother. And so I'm always like, put my little pinky over, you know. I'm going, touching them, and they'd be going, Mom, Dad, Brian's touching me, Brian. And now all of a sudden my dad would get like so upset. He'd be like, trying to get me like this. And finally he would say, that's it, Brian, you're getting a number one. And a number one meant that when we got to the Days Inn Hotel that night, we always stayed at Days Inn, I don't understand that. When we got to the Days Inn Hotel, I was going to get a spanking. Not one. Number one was your first set, your first series. I would get number five. Five batteries of disciplines. And when he would do that, you never knew what it was going to be. I mean, it could be a slipper. Then that way you're like, oh, that's fine, I can handle the slipper. I like it, but that's it. Or it could be you got the hairbrush, my mom's hairbrush. You didn't like to get that. I'll tell you what, one thing I never did whenever I got beat, I never sang. That would not have been a good idea. What my dad did, I'll give you something to sing about. That would not have been a good idea. We only sing when we have this inner joy, when we have this inner peace that transcends all of our circumstances. We only sing, only people who have received Jesus and are experiencing fully his freedom can sing in the midst of when you lose your job in a crappy economy. Only people who have received a grace, and you can't even describe it, but we know when you sense it, and you have everything about it, can you be happy when everybody else is walking out on you? You feel free because your freedom is not dependent on your world going the way you want it to go, but your freedom is dependent on Jesus, the freedom giver, the one who says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. You know, we can gather here in America, but you go to other countries in the world and you can't gather if you want to align yourself or even consider who Jesus is. China is one of those countries. So there's an underground church that has to meet secretively. And when they find out that the leaders of that church are trying to build into people spiritually and it goes against some things that might be of the tenets of communism or to keep their quote unquote peace, they'll actually arrest and beat people. It happens very regularly. One guy has come over here to the United States that used to be, or still is, a leader in the Chinese underground church, and read a book by him recently called Living Water, and here's what he says, Brother Yun, who has been beaten and imprisoned numerous times. He says, after I left China, I discovered that pastors in the West have Mondays off and go on summer holidays every year. In China, the believers have no opportunity to take holidays, so the Lord graciously becomes our travel agent and books us in for a much-needed rest at prison. That is freedom. That is freedom. Well, my freedom is dependent on my relationship with Jesus, and it's not dependent on anything else that's happening in my physical world. That's freedom. Freedom is dependent. Freedom is fearlessness. Freedom is fearlessness. It says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is fear. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is morality. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. It actually says in the Bible, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love, power, of self-discipline. Whenever I'm afraid, whenever I'm paranoid, whenever I'm losing sleep, I'm not free. I am not free. We live not in the home of the free and the home of the brave, the land of the free and the home of the brave. We don't live there. We live in the land of the fear and the home of the slave. We are the most enslaved nation to our fears in the history of the world. The history of the world, there's been no nation that's been more afraid than us. Be afraid, be very afraid. We have the insurance policies to prove it. We have the paranoia to prove it. We have the mental disorders to prove it. We have all the medications we take to prove it. We have all of the, and all these things, I'm saying individually, these things aren't the right thing individually. I'm just saying when you look at the holistic thing, we as a nation are paranoid, are fearful, are enslaved. Maybe it's because we have so much to lose. We're the land of the fear. We have more rules, more laws, more safety issues, more, it's ridiculous. We probably have some people in here who, part of Macy's department stores, Federated department stores, headed in Cincinnati. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Yes, you should. You should be ashamed of yourself. MSNBC. Just before this last week, I read this, that Macy's has recalled 33,000 hoodies because you might get strangled by wearing a hoodie. No lie. 33,000 hoodies have been recalled because they're afraid someone's going to get strangled and someone's going to lawsuit. Nobody has. Not a single person they said in the article has. But yet, hey, it's not so bad we have to mandate everybody wears a helmet. But now you can't wear a hoodie because they're afraid someone might get strangled. You might sue us. This is ridiculous. But this is just an over-the-top example of the fears, the stuff that we have when we're afraid someone's going to walk out on us. When we're afraid someone's going to do us wrong, when we're afraid we're going to lose market share, when we're afraid someone's going to say something bad about us on our back, when we're afraid that the worst thing can happen when my kid gets in the car and drives away, when we're afraid, we just go on and on and on. We, in that moment, we are in a prison. We're not free. We are bound. We are restricted. Mary Lemieux, greatest hockey player ever to live, so says this native Pittsburgher. His Pittsburgh Penguins, who he now has a partial ownership in because of a bankruptcy ruling a number of years ago, after the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup Finals were down 3-2 after getting shellacked 5-0. In Game 5, it was no-brainer. The Penguins were going to lose. They were going back to play at Detroit, and the whole team was down, dooby-dooby, down. And he has a text message that he sends the entire team, which he doesn't do, but he did it this time. He sent a text message to all his players, and here's what it said. This is a chance of a lifetime to realize your childhood dream to win a Stanley Cup. Play without fear, and you will be successful. See you at center ice. They went out and played without fear, did the unthinkable. They won in 7 games, and he saw them at center ice. If you have dreams, if you have passions, if you have desires, you are free to go after those. You are. And if you have fear that you're not going to be able to do it, you're going to fail, you won't get there. Where there is freedom, there is fearlessness. We're going to do a song later on today. It's a song that was written in our last Wednesday service, which was last Wednesday, which is the last Wednesday of the month. That last Wednesday service a few weeks ago. And one of the things that they did is we had the artsy musical types who were down front here. And if you were here and you sensed that God might want to say something to people, you could actually write that down, come down and give them some ideas of what it was. And then on the spot, they went to from 0 to 60, writing a song that had never been written before. They didn't have a pre-orchestrated tune. They took all these thoughts, put them into a song. It was kind of awkward for 10 or 15 minutes, but it was pretty, pretty powerful. Let me tell you something. Creative people need to be fearless. Because if you are afraid that it's not going to work, you're going to be afraid it's not going to be any good, you're not going to be free to be creative. This is one of the things that really has stifled my creativity. My dad, God bless him, awesome guy, very thankful for my dad. Hey, let's give a shout out to fathers today in here. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Even those fathers who have screwed us over. Yes, let's thank them too. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I know I'm hurting my kids. I don't know how, but they'll be in therapy for sure. My dad, one of the ways that, that I experienced bondage was when I would do a project with him, like an Indian guide project. We were painting this like pine box derby. This little car thing would go down a track or anything like that. If there was anything that was crafty, artistic-y, creative, the way it would work is I would take my first shot at it. It would be done. And then my dad would come up and say, okay, let me just touch it up. And by the time he was done touching it up, you couldn't even recognize what I had done. He had completely overhauled his perfectionist attitude, gone over, he had completely overhauled. And what this did for me, is it kind of put a seed in me, I believe. It said, what you do, Brian, is not good enough. You're just not good enough. And you're not creative. You're not good enough, and you're not creative. When those seeds are placed in us at a young age or right now, when you start to feel that way, you have a fear to do anything creative. You have a fear to actually do anything because somebody might reject it. But see, when I've received Jesus, when I received him, he is the grace giver. He is the freedom giver. And when I feel approved by him, that no matter what I do, he approves of me, this gives me a freedom to create that he's not going to have to come in and touch it up. He's going to accept me the way that is. And when I this is sort of a form of art right here. If I do this, wondering whether or not I'm going to get email messages because I said, Dad screwed us over. If I sit here and I'm concerned, I don't want to say anything that's going to cause negative feedback, then I'm doing it from a place of fear and there will be no power. And it doesn't mean that I shouldn't get negative feedback every once in a while. But when I'm afraid of somebody not liking something, it's a form of a prison. It keeps me from being me. It keeps me from being free. 2 Corinthians 3:17 says this. Now the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is perfection. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is morality. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is religion. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is right and wrong. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's everybody towing the line. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is condemnation. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is goody two-shoes. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is Republicans. Not where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is Democrats. Not where the Spirit of the Lord, where the Spirit of the Lord, freedom. Freedom. That is the defining thing you sense when God is around. Freedom. God is for freedom. He is pro-freedom. He defines freedom a bit differently than we define it, because we define freedom as, I do whatever the heck I want to. And we say that. We think we're being free. But no, we're acting out of our old prisons. We're acting out of our old paranoias. We're acting out of our rebelliousness. We're maybe in bondage to rebelliousness. We think we're being free. But no, you're just in bondage to rebelliousness. You can't toe a line. You can't, because you always have to be your own person. You're like bound to be your own person. Isn't it interesting? You always hang out with people who are also their own people. You just picked a different group to hang with that are exhibiting the same sort of bondage of unable to actually follow directions, free to follow directions. The Spirit of the Lord is, there is fearlessness. There is dependence. Last week we talked about some of the stuff that was happening around here financially that was positive. And I heard some people, they said, ooh, man, I don't know if you should like tell people when things are going okay financially, because, man, people might just like back off and not be generous then. That's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. That's being ruled by fear. That's not being thankful out of fear that someone might not do something. That's kind of weird things. We overthink things. And we are unable to just interact with God, connect, and have fun and receive Him and experience life in its fullness. Third thing freedom is there's a lot of defining characteristics. I was tethered there. Okay, freedom is arduous. Freedom is arduous. There is this freedom that you instantaneously have when you receive Jesus. There is a way that it will be played out eternally. I don't mean to sound like a preacher here, but I actually am one, so it's not like one for a moment. You know, if you receive Jesus and in here and you go out here and you get hit by a bus, there is an eternal freedom that you will experience being one with God because you wanted Jesus now, you'll have Him and God's character forever. There is an instantaneous freedom you have. But God isn't interested just in us having pie in the sky when we die. He wants freedom now. That's what Jesus says, I've come to set the captives free. Jesus didn't come say, hey, I've come to just tell people who are in prison, hey, don't worry about it, you'll go to heaven someday. No, I've come to set the captives free. So what God wants for us right now is for us to be who we are and us to be free right now. And this is an arduous, difficult process. It's not like, oh, I say a prayer and, oh, I'm free. Well, maybe in some ways, but your addictions that you're bound to are going to take a heck of a lot longer to get over. Freedom is arduous. I was talking with somebody recently who said, man, I'm just so thankful. About 18 months ago, Crossroads, we did an all-church journey called Consumed. He said, man, I just feel free financially. You know, he went through that, his family went through that, and they buckled down on their credit card debt, they cut their spending, they increased giving, they brought their stuff down, and over 18 months, they've become free, and so they just noticed their friends hadn't done arduous stuff to get free financially, and when the economy hit, there was utter and complete bondage. This is the way it is with everything. When we notice that we've been in a form of bondage, it's an arduous, ongoing process. We have to keep claiming our freedom, keep walking in it, keep reminding ourselves of it. And sometimes we take two steps forward, and then we take a step back. But two steps forward and a step back is still one step forward. It's an arduous, ongoing process. One of the movies that's one of my favorite movies of all time is called Shawshank Redemption. Yeah, it was it's not a family movie. Please don't take your 4-year-olds to watch this movie. It's pretty awesome movie. And whenever something strikes a chord deep inside of me relative to a movie, it's always because it's somehow connected with the character of God. Anytime you are moved emotionally, it's somehow connected to the character of God, where who you are being created in the image of God is somehow connecting with God on some level. And this movie really connected with me, specifically a scene I'm going to show you right now where this guy wants to get out of prison, except it's an arduous process. And if a picture is worth 1,000 words, let me just give you a clip that's even worth more than that. Let's check this out. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. You know, you got to go through crap to attain your freedom. You do. You do. You sometimes got to go back and think through why you are the way you are. What happened? What's the beginning? You gotta unravel lies that you believed. You gotta do some hard work. It is an arduous, long process to fully feel it right now. Right now. This is why our next all church journey, next spring, is gonna be on freedom. The whole thing is gonna be on freedom, helping us untangle things and becoming the people who are meant to be free. But let me just give you a couple ideas right now to think about. These things always happen when you get four things I'll just give you. Little quick bank shots to consider right now. One is this. Depend on Jesus. It sounds trite, but depend on Jesus. When I look at Jesus, I don't see a rule giver. I see someone who says, take my yoke upon you because my burden is light. Depend on Jesus. Look to Him and receive Him. In the book of Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, it parallels or contrasts Jesus with the way of established religion. It says this, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and don't let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. It's for freedom. It's for freedom. Not for a better religion, not for a more pure religion, but for freedom. Don't let yourselves be burdened by religious obligations. It's for freedom. Now, look what happens here. While these guys are depending on Jesus, they're singing praises, they're praying in this prison. Look what happens. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open, and everyone's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, "Don't harm yourself. We're all here." The jailer called for lights, rushed in, and fell, trembling before Paul and Silas. He then brought them out and asked, "Sirs, what must I do to be free? Excuse me, to be saved. What must I do to be saved?" Same thing, actually. They replied, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." This is a thing where this jailer sees the freedom that Paul and Silas have, not because they're being diligent in their religion, but because they're depending on somebody who's giving them freedom that transcends physical circumstances. And he says, "I want what you have. What must I do to be saved? Saved from my life of prison, saved from an eternity far from God. What is it?" And he said, "Here it is." And he receives Jesus, and there is an amazing thing that happens because they depend on Jesus. So depend on Jesus. That's step one. The second thing, notice your bars. Notice your bars. You are or have been in prison. It's part of the human nature. And you're like going, "Man, I'm not. What do you mean? I'm not bound. I'm not free. You might not even notice your bars, but it's because you got flat screen televisions maybe hanging in front of your bars. Got nice Laura Ashley wallpaper. They still make Laura Ashley wallpaper. It used to be the hot thing back when I wallpapered, which is a long time ago. Whatever it was, you got Ralph Lauren wallpaper. Whatever it is, you got nice wallpaper and things. But you might not even notice that you're actually in a prison. Maybe you have just accepted a way of living that to you is just the way you are, but really it's the way you are when you're bound, when you are actually in prison. Like I'll hear people say this, people who are saying they depend on Jesus, I'll hear someone say, "Well, you know what, I'm just not a disciplined person. I'm just not a disciplined." They're accepting that they don't have discipline. The Bible says, "Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom," and that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, of self-discipline. So when I say, "Well, I can't change, I can't be disciplined, I can't," you're accepting the bars of limitation that says that you can't change. You know, you will hear people say, "Well, you know, I'm Irish. You know, I'm just, you know, and I can't help it that I get mad and I drink a lot. You know, that's what we do. We're Irish. We just get mad, and sometimes I just feel it, and it's kind of in my blood." If you just accept that, you go, "Whoa, whoa," or someone will say, "Well, you know what, I just like the ladies. I'm Italian, after all. You know, I just like the ladies, and, you know, I'm Italian," or someone, "You know, I just like to retreat. I'm French. That's just what I like to do. I make fun of the French every once in a while. Those of you who are French here, thank you for not throwing things at me right now. But, you know, we all do that. We all do that. And you know what? The French, they got all kind of jokes about us having fun with us, too. Everyone's all quiet now. Woo? Really? Yeah, we're the fattest nation in the history of the world. "Oh, no, it's my metabolism. It's just my metabolism. That's just the way it is. I just got a pituitary gland or whatever." Interesting how it doesn't happen like that in any other country to the same degree. We're just bound to our addiction of more, I need, whatever it is, the largest landfills, the largest eating habits, the largest whatever. We say, "Oh, look out there, hold on. Yeah, I'm stepping in your cell right now, aren't I?" It doesn't feel very good, does it? It feels really good when we can look at somebody else and say, "You're wrong, you're doing this, you're doing that." We're actually, some of us are bound to judging other people. You're bound right now. You haven't even been listening to what I'm saying. You're bound to critiquing whether I'm saying is right or not. Maybe you're not even open to hearing truth. You're just going, "Ooh, I like them. I don't like that." Because you have an addiction to justify whether something is right or wrong. Some people say, "Well, I'm just a critical person. That's just the way I am." Yeah, because you're in prison, right? You're not free. Yes, you're a critical person. Yes, you always assume it's the white people who are doing the wrong things. Yes, you always assume it's the black people who are doing the wrong things. You initially jump right there because it's another form of being in bondage. I started talking about fathers. I'm like, ooh, man, dad, ooh, man, I come here to get away from my background. I'm going to be talking about dad with me. Ooh, ooh. You know, some of us, man, we've got some bad relationships with our parents. And because of that, we're in a prison of perpetual bitterness. In fact, we have an endless prescription of bitterness pills we keep popping. We keep popping them, and we're not, oh, I'm not bitter. I'm just righteous. That's all. No, you're bitter. No, you're very, very bad. That's why people don't like you. That's why I don't like to be around you. You know, these are the bars that sort of notice the bar. And one of the reasons why we may not even notice the bars is because we spend time with people who are all in the same prison we're in. So everybody who's critical of Barack Obama, we spend time with them. Or critical of George Bush, we spend time with them. Or I cannot imagine not having sex till you're married. We're like, I just feel like sex. I'm just made that way. You're not a dog. You're not a dog in heat. Oh, where? I'm in heat. No, you're created in the image of God. You have abilities to refrain and restrain that dogs don't have. And when you think that you can't, you're in bondage. You're in bondage to all of your impulses. And you probably hang out with people who feel the same way. May you can be free and happy when you're not even dating anybody, but yet you might have never noticed. Why is it I'm always dating somebody and there's always an overlap? I always don't break up with this person until I know I got someone in the queue. Why is that? It's a form of bondage. You don't feel free unless you're connected and being affirmed by somebody of the opposite sex. I mean, I could go on and on and on with these things, but we just accept these things because we tend to gravitate towards the same cells where the same people are. And one of the things we need to do is we need to get out of our cell, notice our bars, and also spend time with people who are free. Spend time with people who are free. It's one of the things I'm a big advocate of coming to a place like here, a place like Crossroads. We're not a perfect place at all. But one thing I do hear regularly from people who are first-timers, and you might remember when you felt this, I hear this regularly. People say, man, I just walked in that atrium, and I was like, ooh, I just like how this feels in here. I just, feels good. It's huge. But it feels, you know why? It's because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. That's why. And you walk in, you go, ooh, freedom. I mean, people have the freedom to make their own political choices, not told to vote one political way. Oh, you mean people have the freedom here to have some beers? Oh, I mean, you mean people have the freedom here to have different convictions about what the Bible is, and we're not trying to get everybody to think the same way? Oh, you mean people have the freedom here? Whatever it is. And you mean people have the freedom here to run away from addictions? You mean people have the freedom here to be themselves and to be artists? I mean, be around free people. Don't stay around people who are justifying behavior and trying to approve it when really it's just a form of prison. It's a form of bondage. We need to be around places like this, not because good religious people go to church every week, but because hopefully you have a higher likelihood of encountering free people that can help you get free, that can help you experience it. I need to be around people who are free. I need to be around people who aren't afraid to do things that are said that you shouldn't do. I need to be around people who give me freedom as a pastor to be me, even if most pastors don't do some of the things I do. I need to be around people who are free to have fun, even when alcohol isn't there. Yes, that actually happens. You might not know that because you can't have fun unless there is alcohol there. I need to be around people who are free. I need to be around people who are free to be encountering God in every single situation and expressing who God has created them to be. Be with free people. And then finally, take a step. Just take a step now. We're going to take a step right now. Just take one step. You could take a step of just noticing that you've been in a prison, you've been justifying, maybe just praying and saying, God, I'm sorry. Man, I've been justifying my prison, but it is a prison. I've been justifying my judgmental attitude, but I'm bound to that. I can't stop thinking negative things about other people. Take a step. Notice these things. One way we're going to take a step is we're going to have the opportunity to sing, which oftentimes is the time for people who are trying to fulfill religious obligations, take a step and try to beat the traffic. Hey man, if you're here to encounter God and get free, we think through strategically how to do 65 minutes. If you're here to check the box, go somewhere else. Don't make a bolt out of here every single time. Oh, okay, Brian's done, I'm leaving. I'm not that good. Don't come for me, please. But you could take a step by singing. You could take a step by singing. And we're going to do this song that was written at last Wednesday. And then we're also going to segue this song into Psalm 40, which is The story of somebody who got free because God frees them, pulls them up out of the mire, and they sing, how long? How long to sing the song? It's an arduous process. How long? I feel you, God. I feel free, yet I feel sometimes like I'm stuck. I need your freedom. Let's take a step right now.